Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. I'm Emily Owensworth, and today we are discussing a topic that's top of mind for many lawyers in our field at the moment. Am I ready for specialist accreditation? To help answer this question, we have a special guest today, Sarah Dibley. Sarah has been practicing exclusively in family law for the past 14 years and is a special counsel at Lander & Rogers. Sarah is accredited herself and currently sits on Queensland's Family Law Accreditation Advisory Committee. She'll share her insights and whether this prestigious recognition is right for you. Sarah, welcome. It's great to have you on today.
Thank you so much for having me, Emily.
Sarah, before we dive into the accreditation process, can you give us a little bit of background on what the Queensland Law Society Specialist Accreditation Scheme is for those who might not be familiar with it?
Certainly. So specialist accreditation is a national benchmark for recognising specialist expertise in the area of law that you choose to specialise in. It's a practical and peer-reviewed competency-based accreditation program, which is intended to promote the professional advancement of the solicitors that undertake it. There is an assessment process which seeks to verify the standard of professional experience and performance through different assessment formats. You must reach specialist standard in all items of assessment, so there's a written exam, take-home assessment and oral assessment in order to achieve accreditation.
That sounds like quite a comprehensive process. So, Sarah, who can sit specialist accreditation?
So, in order to apply to sit, you need to have at least 5 years post-admission experience. You need to be a member of the relevant law society. And for 3 years immediately prior to application, you need to be able to demonstrate substantial involvement in the area of law which you're applying for. So to be substantially involved in your area of specialty means at least 1.25 days of practice is dedicated to that area each week. You also need 3 referees to support your application.
Okay. So that sounds like there's a bit involved with that as well.
Yeah.
So when can someone sit specialist accreditation?
So in Queensland, the Queensland Law Society runs the program for family law every second year. So it's running this year in 2025.
I know you've touched on there is 3 assessments with specialist accreditation. What do they involve?
So, yeah, there are 3 areas. The first is a written exam. The exam in family law, it's generally in 2 parts. Part A is a long answer question, mm-hmm. and Part B is several shorter answer style questions. You need to pass both parts of those in order to meet the standard of an accredited specialist. The exam, that's occurring this year on the 26th of July, and it goes for 3.5 hours. There's also a simulated client interview that is happening on the 27th of July this year, and that process is allocated 1 hour. And there's also a take-home assignment, and this involves a mock file and a requirement to complete certain tasks in relation to the file you're provided, and it might include something like a letter of advice or drafting court material.
So, Sarah, with the take-home, how long do you have to complete it?
So, the file will be released on the 6th of June and it's due on the 24th of June.
Okay, so you've got a few weeks to read it, look at the tasks that you need to complete and complete them and have them all submitted by that date.
Yes, that's right. It'll bring you back to uni days, but don't leave it to the last minute.
Yes, no cramming.
Exactly.
Okay, wonderful. And are they all online or are they done in person? How do they run?
So, yes, it is. It's all online effectively. Okay. The simulated interview that's conducted with a client online, video call, so you see your client online. And the exam and take-home assignment, obviously, is at home as well.
Yes. So it sounds like it's really about demonstrating your expertise, not just about your experience when you look at the exams that are involved and the eligibility to be able to sit it. When is the best time to sit specialist accreditation?
I think the answer to that is probably different for everyone. I would encourage people to think about their own work and personal commitments, particularly over the really intensive assessment period, so the June, July. It's really important that you have a supportive employer if you're working for someone, or if you're working for yourself, that the time to dedicate to it. You need to be mindful of, you know, any existing obligations that you've got, and whether or not you have the space to dedicate the time required, because it's not sort of, you know, a couple of hours here and there. It really is an intensive time commitment. The lead up involves a lot of preparation. It really is about picking a time that suits what else you've got going on in your life, so you don't feel torn across lots of different pressures. In terms of other things, you might consider feedback from senior colleagues. If you're being encouraged by people that see the quality of your work, see your interactions with clients, see the material you're preparing, if they're encouraging you to give it a go, that might be an indicator that it's a good time for you. Another good thing to consider is friends and colleagues that might be doing it. I personally did the program with a couple of friends, and it definitely made the process easier.
Sarah, why do people want to become an accredited specialist?
I think there are a few different reasons, and it might vary person to person. As professionals, we're always learning. We have an obligation to continue to learn and stay up to date with best practice, in addition to ensuring we have all our CPD points. So participating in this program is a really comprehensive way to ensure and advance your ongoing development. It's really an opportunity to dedicate 6 or so months to deep learning, to take that next step in your professional career, and it will, in my experience, really refine and hone your skills. You might do it to build your referral network. People might feel confident referring clients to you if you're a specialist. It's a marketing tool, ultimately. It can increase your personal profile and reputation, as well as enhancing your firm's brand. You can be added to the QLS Find an Accredited Specialist referral list. And ultimately, I think it's going to benefit your career, whether you're starting your own firm or you're looking for a promotion or some sort of advancement. It's useful to have that behind you. There are 187 accredited family law specialists in Queensland, I'm told, out of 487 family lawyers. So it's a way to set yourself apart.
Definitely. It sounds like it's a good way to show others that, you know, you have taken that next step in your career, and you know you're wanting to constantly grow and evolve. So I feel like if someone is thinking about taking the next step in the career, specialist accreditation is really something to consider for them.
Definitely. If you've been practicing in the area for a while, you know, that 5-year mark, and you're looking for a way to continue your own learning and journey, I think it's a great opportunity to do that.
Wonderful. And I know you said, you know, the best time to do spec accreditation is when, you know, you're getting some feedback from mentors and it's the right time for you in your life. But how do people know personally, okay, I'm ready for specialist accreditation? Was there a point in your career when you thought, this is the turning point, I'm ready to take it on?
I don't know that I ever felt that I was absolutely ready and I needed to do it, but it was a shift beyond sort of thinking, oh, that's something that I should do, to being interested in giving it a go. I think feedback from employers played a really critical role in that, just giving you the confidence to give it a go. So if senior colleagues are suggesting to you that you're ready, I think that's a really good sign, particularly if they're familiar with your work.
Yeah.
In terms of that, I think checking letters is one thing, and that's something that's probably commonly done, and settling material. In terms of the simulated client interview, it might be helpful to get people to sit in on your interviews. If you're conducting them by yourself and you haven't necessarily had the feedback on them for a while and you want to get some guidance, I think if you have an employer that's, you know, willing to sit in and give you some feedback on your interviews, I think that would be a really valuable exercise, because we have noticed in the last couple of years that in general, I would say the quality of the interviews has been where people have had the most challenge. And it might be that we've all sort of shifted away a little bit from, you know, in person and going along and watching your boss's interview clients and watching people appear from the back of court. So having someone that you work with willing to sit in and give you some feedback on your interview approach, I think would be a really worthwhile part of assessing how ready you feel for the process.
Yes, and I suppose gone are the days where, you know, because of COVID and all of the restrictions of being around other people, we used to have two or three people in interviews or new client appointments to watch and observe and take notes or whatnot. And with COVID restrictions, sometimes it would just be one person going in. And so people lost the ability to sit and observe and watch, yes, or then have someone come in and give you feedback after. And that's probably a really important and pivotal thing for these exams, particularly the interview, getting that feedback beforehand.
Definitely.
And not receiving it, you know, after you've potentially failed and going, oh, well, I would have been handy to know that.
Exactly. And I think if you are, you've been in that sort of generation where you're not learning by sitting in on other people's consults, because it's not so much of an option as much anymore,
yes,
you wouldn't really have the benefit of feedback in relation to your interview style and whether you're asking questions that are going to draw out issues, or are you managing the way the client's giving you information. So I think it would be really valuable in terms of, you know, you assessing on a personal level whether or not you're ready, to have some feedback on not just your written work and not just drafting, but also your approach when you're interviewing clients.
Yes, and even sitting in or getting feedback from multiple people, I find it's really valuable, you know, sitting in client appointments with different partners or mentors or senior practitioners and taking bits from each of them for your own practice. And, you know,
Definitely.
So then when you go in for an interview, you're taking the good bits from everyone.
Exactly. And we all have such different styles.
Yes.
And what works and comes naturally to one person may not feel as comfortable for you. So I think if you're lucky enough to work somewhere with lots of different people, making yourself available to sit in would be a really great way to prepare for the interview aspect of this.
Yes. So for people who sit the accreditation exams, if they do happen to fail, how many times can they sit it again? Is it a one and done? What's the process for that?
Yeah, you can absolutely sit it again. And there are plenty of people that do. I don't have exact numbers on it, but I'm told by the Queensland Law Society that over the years the pass rate has been between 20 and 50%. So plenty of people do not pass the first time around, but I don't want that to be, you know, discouraging for people giving it a go. If you do not pass the first time around, I think the second time around you're going to be in a really great position to do a fantastic job of it, having the experience of the first time. You'll already have been over your notes. You'll know what to expect in terms of the interview format, etc. So I think if you don't quite make it the first time around, you know, don't be put off by giving it another go.
Yeah. And is it you have to pass all three assessments, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. You have to pass all three assessments in both parts of the exam in order to get it.
Yeah, and if you fail one part, let's say it's the take-home exam, you can't just resit that the next time you do it, correct?
Yeah,
you
that's
have to
right.
redo it all.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. I understand that if you do fail an aspect of it, you receive feedback, so you will have the benefit of that in your preparations the next time around.
Okay. And when you finish the exams, what is typically the turnaround time for getting results back?
I think in the last couple of years it's been results released November-ish. Before the accreditation breakfast is the aim.
Yeah.
So whenever that is, perhaps it's early December. So I think the assessment should be concluded by the end of July. So then, yeah, by the time of that accreditation breakfast, the aim is to have results out.
And is there any other sort of common mistakes that you see people do leading up into the specialist accreditation or during the exams or you could speak to?
I think one of the biggest challenges is the fact that generally we're all really, really busy. Mm. So I would really encourage there to be an intentional process in terms of managing your commitments around this. Yes, the assessment is on the weekend, aside from the take home, but I would encourage people to be really organised about allocating time to this that's non-negotiable. It can be really easy to sort of get swept away with our work and everyone wants answers and replies now.
Yes.
But I would really encourage people to have some sort of pre-planning in terms of, you know, looking ahead at your diary for June and July in particular to see what you have on because it's an intense period of time. So if you've got an intense workload and lots going on at home and you try to do this at the same time, it can be really a difficult thing to manage.
Yes. And I mean, based on your experience, how many hours per week or per day would you allocate to preparing?
I started preparing not long after the information list was shared. So I tried to do it in sort of shorter periods of time over a longer period of time. But it sort of depends on how you learn personally and what your day is like and what availability you have. I would say for me, it definitely suited my preparation style to ensure that I had some time off before the exam and the interview just to sort of be free from distractions. And really sort of focus. The Law Society makes practice exams available, so I think in advance it would be a good idea to start working through those with enough time to sort of identify if there are any areas you need to focus on before the exam. But I don't know that there's a specific duration in terms of how long you should spend on it. Just start early because...
How early do you think?
We're busy. Yeah. I think it would be useful to really go through the reading material as soon as you get it to sort of work out how long you feel you'll need to allocate to different things. And we all learn differently. Some people need to read, some people need to type. So just familiarise yourself with what you
Your style of learning.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can work out how much time. And you know, if you're the sort of person that sort of needs no distractions, get in and apply for some leave before the key dates in the assessment so you have that space.
Yes. No, that's great advice. What advice would you give to a family lawyer who is considering going for the accreditation but might be feeling a little unsure about whether it is the right move?
In addition to the things that we've spoken about, I think having the right frame of mind and perspective in relation to the program is a really important thing. It can be daunting, and we don't, as lawyers, like to fail.
Yes.
But we know when we look at the rates that it's not,
it's not uncommon. Yeah.
Exactly. So for me, I tried to have a perspective on it that was not just about the result. I tried to focus on the fact that if I went through it and did not pass, I have still learnt a lot. You're going to get value out of it, irrespective of what the outcome is. So I think if you approach it from that perspective, it might help. it's still going to be stressful and you're still going to worry about the outcome. But if you go into it with an attitude of, you know, you're trying to refine your knowledge, you're trying to improve how you can service your clients, you will get that result from the program. Mm.
So, you know, you're not really losing out even if you do it and don't pass. You're still
exactly
improving as a lawyer. You're getting some more knowledge.
Exactly. You've not lost anything by trying if you learn something while you're doing it.
Yes.
So it's a great way to force yourself to be on top of those new cases and across the legislative changes.
Yes.
It's really good for that, and it will encourage you to stay completely up to date. So if nothing else, you'll be a better family lawyer for doing it.
Yes. Okay, great. Well, that's fantastic insight, Sarah. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your knowledge with us today. I'm sure our listeners, especially those thinking about specialist accreditation, will find this really valuable.
My pleasure, and good luck to everyone that's thinking of applying.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We will catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.